When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, welcome, welcome one and all to Knife Talk, the only podcast that takes knife making seriously. We take it very seriously, in fact. Joined with me today are Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, Moreko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts, and myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. We hope you're all having a great week. How are things, guys?
Doing good.
Good. Moreko, how you doing, Moreko?
I'm doing good. I'm at the island. I'm at the lake house on the island in the Puget Sound, and hopefully trying to get some relaxing downtime. But honestly, feeling a little small part of me still feels a little anxious just thinking about all the shit I got to do still. But I'm trying to take it easy. The kid and I actually just went razor clam digging a couple days ago, which was a blast. The beach we had to go to, there's usually multiple beaches that are open and available, but there's only one this time. And so I was kind of worried it was going to be super busy. And typically the weather isn't that nice in the afternoon at the beaches in Washington in the winter. Imagine that. But it was fucking stunning. I'll have to send you guys a picture. I took a panoramic and it was absolutely beautiful. Really nice sunset. It was somewhat warm, even though we're on the coast. It wasn't even that windy. We went to this beach that is the only beach airport in the lower 48. It's called Copalis State Airport. Wow. And it was super fun. It was a lot of fun. And
what does that mean? That what is a beach airport as opposed to
it means the landing strip is on the beach.
Huh.
Yeah. So the beach is wide enough and firm enough there that airplanes can land on there with still like people out clam digging and cars parked along the beach and all that shit. It's crazy. And then the last time I went,
How are you getting the clams up?
With I use a clam gun. So basically, it's a cylinder with a purge hole and some handles on it. And then you block the purge hole as you pull it up, and it pulls up a cylinder of sand. And then you just dump it out, and hopefully the clam's in there. And if not, you shoot another one. And hopefully it's in there. And if not, then you got to dig by hand.
Yeah.
Craig's always, purging his hole with a clam.
Always. That's what the harsh lack
is on my
for.
Christmas list, a clam gun.
Extra large perch hole, please.
So silly.
So we did good though. We killed it. We both hit our limit, which was 15 clams each in an hour. The last time I went razor clam digging was with a buddy, and it took us 3 hours to hit our limit. It was a bitch, and it was rainy, and it was nighttime, and we had headlamps, and you couldn't see where the clams were. a couple days back when I went with the kid. You could see all the shows. It was awesome. So it was a blast. It was a really good razor climbing experience. The kid had a great time. It's going to be a hard one to beat, honestly. But then the follow-up is you got all these damn clams now, and you got to clean them. So I spent like 3.5 or 4 hours cleaning them yesterday, which is just part of it. It's just part of it. But they're going to be so good fried up. And so I'm excited to move forward.
How are you going to serve them? Fried with?
Yeah. So I like to, so I'll dredge them in flour and then I hit them in egg. And then I finish them in matzo meal. Matzo meal is a great coating I've found. I've been doing it for the last couple of years now. And so I hit it with the matzo meal and then just fry it in some like vegetable oil or whatever. And serve it with like a lemon garlic kind of aioli kind of dip. And it is awesome. It's so good.
Damn.
It's so good. And the way that I'll have to send you a picture of this too. The way I clean the razor clams is usually people will just rip the foot off and then have the body meat separate. A buddy of mine showed me how to clean the razor clam so you keep it all together. And so you just have this like nice mixture of kind of like, not necessarily chewy, but just various textures. And where the foot is the most tender kind of, I don't know what to liken it to. It's like a perfectly medium rare cut of steak. It's awesome. It's so good. So we're looking forward to them. But otherwise, just chilling.
Send me a pic of your meaty clam.
Fucking
1,000%. I'm doing it right now.
You're a nice fucking guy. Craig, how's your clam?
It's good. It's afternoon here. The house is just emptied. I'm all good here. We're back in France, finally. Although we've just booked a huge trip back to the UK, but anyway, that's another story. It's good. We came back and the sun has been shining. We've been back 3 days now and it's been t-shirt weather, outside eating. Amazing. So really happy. I've been working on a project for a little while. I haven't really spoken about it on the show, but do you remember the tactical butter knife that I did that had the slot?
Yes.
The slot. Well, I got contacted a while back about this from a restaurant, and it's not the normal sort of restaurant that I work with. This one is more sort of a canteen, and they got a bunch of them all around France. And they were like, they'd like to use that design. Could we have a set of cutlery, as in, you know, knives, forks, spoons, and so on? So been working with them. But the order, what started off as a small order, it's just grown and grown and grown. So there's very little sort of money in each unit, but you know, altogether it comes out to be quite a big contract. But what's been really interesting is I've been speaking with a potter, because they're doing ceramics, but they're not being turned. But if you imagine the slot in that butter knife that I shared the pictures of, imagine a knife, fork, and spoon all having that same slot.
I know where this is going.
But imagine like a ceramic sort of mound, and they could all stack up inside of that. So they'd stack up on top of each other, taking very little room, you know? So I've been speaking with the potter, you know, giving them dimensions and all that kind of thing. So they're making a bunch of these holders. And the idea is you'll just be able to slap one on the table with sort of 10 knives or forks on it and so on, you know, and people can be away. So, yeah, it's quite interesting working with that kind of restaurant, which is very different to sort of the high-end sort of bespoke stuff. But yeah, it's been fun, and that's been chugging along for the last few weeks, and it's only this week we've really had sort of final confirmation that it's happening, so it's been good.
Very nice. Intrepid company.
Intrepid?
Yeah, I mean, usually restaurants aren't like designing flatware to that extent with potters and stuff like that, so it makes you think that like, you know, they got some money to spend.
They have. They're a huge chain. I'm sure everybody in France would know them. But they're massive. But you know, they're not high end. They're very much, I say, sort of canteen. I liken it to, when I was speaking to a friend about earlier today, to the canteen in IKEA. It's that kind of place, you know. IKEA. And they're
Carly's everywhere. Listening. So just to let you know, I got messages from Damastil. Damastil is listening. So
she'll stop being a minute. She'll join in. Like she did.
Well, yeah, she's gonna join in because she's got a fucking message for us. But it's IKEA.
Okay. Yeah. So very much like those kind of canteen style things. Yeah. So it's been good. So it's been a good sort of work week. Regarding what's going on here at the house, the studio. We'll be finished. So this time next week, I'll be sitting in my warm well-lit, well-acoustically treated studio. So I cannot wait for all that to happen. Yeah.
Look at you.
It's all good.
Look at you. King of the Empire. King of the Empire.
Yeah. Jeff World, what's going on?
Well, it's been busy. I had, in January, I said I got a Dewar, a full with liquid nitrogen, and I've been like trying to figure out how many knives I can get cryoed in that Dewar. So I've been hauling ass, and we're up to now, I've heat treated and cryoed 75 knives
at that Dewar in just under two months.
We've been hauling ass. And I'm going to try to see if I can knock out another 25 and make it even 100, just because I got all these messages when I said how much I paid for the Dewar. It was like, what do you pay so much for? Well, I'm in Westchester County, ladies and germs. This ain't a handout, you know. So I'm trying to maximize everything. And this has been a really good week. And actually, I'm going to talk about something, and I thought I'd go into something that we could talk about as a trio, as a Knife Talk podcast. So I've caught up on my customs. We're getting some more in, and I'm getting booked to start to do some of the customs, starting them now, and then they're going to be due in March, which is fine by me. We got a good pace, and we've been doing a lot of like one-off knives, tons of one-off knives, tons of the Cosmic Drift. I'm really excited about it. And we started to do, you know, activating the newsletter more and kind of gauging where people are and stuff like that. And it's been a lot of fun because I've been using a lot of old material, and not old material, but like material that I've had sitting around that I just wanted to use. Mm. And one of the pieces I had was Coy Baker sent me a really nice piece of Baker Forge and Tool Raindrop Go My, which has a layer of copper in it. And he'd sent it to me a couple years ago, and I just never gotten to it. And I thought, well, this is the perfect opportunity. So I made a knife out of this Go My, and it was really easy to work with material. And we've made jokes in the past about like copper Go My and all that shit is all like, you know, the CrossFit of knife making and stuff like that. I had a great time making it, and I did a reel about it, and it really went well. The interesting thing about Go My, so Go My has a core. This particular was a 80 CRV2. It had a copper layer, and then it jacketed with pattern welded steel or Damascus on the outsides. The interesting thing about it was when you're pre-grinding before this material, the copper sticks out whether you etch it or not. Sure. So you have like you can see where your core is, because you know that your copper, if you take away the copper, there's the core. Really, really easy way to kind of figure out where the jacketing ends and where it starts, and then you don't have to write lines, you don't have to dip in the acid every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was really good. And I used, you know, it heat treated easy. Coy was awesome with the heat treating, and they make really nice stuff. And I etched it nice, and I used Mareko's coffee treatment. I talked to all these people, and I used all this stuff, and it was a lot of fun. What was interesting was, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I wanted to know what you guys think. We talk about innovation, we talk about technology, we've been talking about AI a lot. It comes up all the time. It comes up, you know, the idea of what manufacturing is now and how things are changing. I've been talking to a lot of people on Full Blast about that, just in general, about like how we see ourselves as makers and knife makers and whatever, and how technology has allowed us to make things that we wouldn't be able to have made before. And what I was coming to the conclusion with a number of different guys, Jimmy Duresta and Chris Zepp and all these master bladesmiths, is there seems to be that technology now has made it so easy for people to get involved with making industrial stuff recreationally. And I wonder if AI and these tech, even, you know, CNC laser jet cutting and getting things water jet cutting, it's convenient, but is it taking away experience? What do you guys think?
That technology already exists, right? And it's being used in a commercial setting. And so it takes some of that heart, I feel like, but, I guess, that human touch away. And I think, I guess it all comes down to the person and what kind of joy they get out of it. But for me, I think that, I mean, there might be some fun and joy in some of the aspects, but I'm, for me personally, I'm always going to want to be hands-on with my grinding.
See, you want the experience.
Yes, for
that's,
sure.
See, that's the thing. And when I say experience, I'm not referring to like enjoyable experience. I'm talking about the experience of knowing how to do something, knowing how to, you know, punch a hole, you know, hit a center punch for with a hole and then make your hole straight, make your... And what it was interesting to me was I you start to see, you know, grinder companies are popping up every 5 minutes and they're making things easier and new forge companies and new this. And there's, you know, Cole Ironworks has been selling more hydraulic presses than ever before. And people are buying more power hammers and you're getting all these, you know, these techniques and these technological advancements to make mm-hmm. things easier. But what you're seeing is a lot less of the experience of having to work hard and kind of like having the years behind you or the time behind you to grow, knowing what you're supposed to be doing in a shop. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Makes sense, but I'd have a counter argument to
go
that.
Go ahead, let's do it.
And that would be that, you know, we always say this, but it's not as simple as buying a CNC machine and hitting go.
Of course.
There's a whole bunch right. of skills that you need for that. And I think as much as there's obviously still definitely a place for, you know, traditional makers making everything as much as they can by hand. And, you know, I enjoy doing that when I do that too. But I also enjoy that whole sort of educational side of things of always learning new stuff.
For sure.
And I think, you know, the fact that we've now got desktop machines that you can buy for, you know, a few $100s that'll do sort of CNC work for you. And, you know, 3D print and all that kind of stuff. We're seeing more and more people use these technologies in what is still be a handmade object, I believe, to be. You know, it's not mass-produced. But I just think a lot of people don't realize that the extra work that goes into that, it isn't just, you know, download a preset, press go, and you've got yourself a knife. It really isn't. And I think going forward, I think maybe in 50 years' time, people will be thinking, I can't believe that you had to use like a CAD program to design it first. You're not letting AI do the design part as well. You know, I just think we've just evolved and things are evolving at a much, much higher rate. So when we say, you know, I can't believe you're not punching that by hand using a drift or whatever. I think maybe in as close to sort of, you know, 15, 20 years, people will be saying, I can't believe you used a CAD system to design that as if that's archaic. Things move on. And I think, you know, I'm fully okay with that. I think if the quality of the end object is worse, why would you take that approach? But when the quality can be, you know, up to the same standard or even better, you know, to much, much higher tolerances, I think why not take that option?
I'm not saying it's bad.
I understand that. What I'm saying is
like, and I'm going to take you to task a little bit because for years you've referred to like profiling and drilling holes as the dumb work. And I'm not taking you to task, really. I'm just saying the word because it sounded cool out of my mouth. But it's like, you know, this past, you know, let's say month and a half, we've been doing knives. We haven't done any lathe. I get water jet cut stuff done from the New Jersey Steel Baron all the time. Mm-hmm. I decided that I wanted to, the last 75 knives, we've done everything by hand. When I say by hand, I'm not saying we forged them all. I'm saying we stock removed, we profiled them all, drilled them all, we did them all, we made them all the same. Yeah. And I felt as though that there was a degree of experience in how are we going to make sure all the holes are the same? How are we going to make sure this is the same? How are we going to make sure this is the same? Mm-hmm. How are we going to make sure all these knives are the same down to the weight? And it was this idea of the experience of figuring out my manufacturing ways in which to guarantee or get close to guarantee that you're getting the same product. Now, I could have water jet cut everything. It probably would have saved me a ton of money on labor. But I felt the need to have the experience, and I'm saying experience as in like understanding how I'm going to go knock these things out in a, you know, like a productive way. And
I think you could take that to the other side of things as well, whereas a monkey like me will just have like a toy CNC machine, basically, just, you know, just for trying things out and making templates. That's what I use mine for mainly. But then you get somebody like Aaron Goff, who has put years and years and years and become a master at using his. You know, so that you do get that level of experience required and that amount of sort of deep learning on this side of things as well.
Well, here's the interesting thing about Aaron Goff. Now, obviously, we know. I mean, he's like the CNC master. But if you watch his videos, he also knows how to do it. He's put the experience in the... He has the experience of being able to make them by hand as well.
Completely, yeah.
So, you know, he's an example of, I know how to do this. I understand what the problems, the things that can happen. And now I'm kind of like getting, you know, upping the game in terms of the technology. And it kind of made me think about the idea of, like, you know, we talk about, like, there's sometimes, and guys who sock removal, there's nothing wrong with it. We're nothing wrong with it. We know, I think I know why now. Unconsciously, why stock removal guys get mad when bladesmiths say, "Oh, you're a stock removal guy," and then why bladesmiths get salty at someone who's just a stock removal guy. And I believe that a lot of it has to do with that concept of experience, like having experience as a bladesmith, having a deep understanding of where it all comes from. And I feel as though that it all comes from this idea of like how we see the future, how we see ourselves in it, and what's our level of experience in this, you know, craft. My TED Talk is over. Sure. Wakanda forever. Wakanda forever, baby. Wakanda forever!
Adults having a proper chat. Wowzers.
Yeah, I know. Prep this fucking show, goddammit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, if to take things back to, you know, using CNC and so on, if you want to do that, and without having to download any sort of software, a perfect introduction, which ties very well with this chat we've just had, head on over to knifeprint.com. It's a CNC tool in the browser. You do it all in the browser. Really helpful tutorials on how to get you started. Design a knife, and you know what? You can press print, and they'll cut one out of steel and send one to you as well. It's an excellent, excellent service. Go take a look. Knifeprint.com. Okay.
I think from now on, when I make a point, I'm going to yell Wakanda forever afterwards. I'm in the middle of Wakanda forever right now. So.
Is it? All right. I don't know what that means.
Well, it's fucking Black Panther. Goddamn you. How dare
sorry,
you show
okay.
some respect. Prince Namor.
Just coming back to last week, actually, what was the Super Bowl result? Do we have a win?
The fucking Chiefs won, and it was like a fucking, it was awesome. It was an incredible game, and everyone thought the fucking Eagles were going to win, and the Chiefs pulled it out at the end, and Matt Stagmer was right, and he don't count out old Pat Mahomes, so congratulations, and here's to Philadelphia. You've lost the World Series, and you've lost the Super Bowl. But you did win the slam dunk championship last night, so congratulations to the 76ers.
Nice. Okay, then. Shall we do some questions?
All the time.
Okay. Mareko, would you like to take the first?
Absolutely. This first one is from Brody. He says, "Hello, is Mareko there? Question. I've only just heard that Mareko was on Forge and Fire, so I went back and watched his episode again. Beautiful blade there. Question about the show. Something just happened. All right, question about the show. When did you do the interviews, and do people really have to give up their blades? Thanks. First off, easy answer is yes. People 100% do give up their blades unless you are the runner-up of the show, and everybody has Josh Smith to thank for that, because he was the second time I went on, I competed with Josh Smith and a couple other guys. And Josh was pissed.
You've just blown Brody's mind. He's only just found out you've been on there, and now you're telling him you've been on twice. He's just going, what?
Oh, thank God you said his mind. Thank okay. God you said mind. I was getting weird over there. All that clam talk. I don't know. Go ahead. Sorry.
And so Josh was really frustrated. And honestly, like the first time I was on, I was frustrated too. It was the first season. I didn't know anything about what was going to happen, and they actually kept all of the weapons, even if you were the runner up or didn't make it to the last round or whatever, even if you won, which kind of makes sense, because in a way it's like they're buying your weapon from you if you lose, or sorry, if you win and you get an award, and it's all in the contracts and stuff anyways. But Josh Smith, I can't think of it right now, but basically on the behalf of all of the other runner-ups, as well as from his own experience, He's like, look, I'm not gonna do this, and he did it the smart way. He waited to get there. They already flew him there. They're ready to start filming, and then he's like, look, I'm not doing this unless we change this rule. And so they were like up to the last minute changing the rules and stuff so that the runner up, if for some reason, you know, you don't win the show, the runner up gets to take his weapon home or their weapon home. And that way they're not completely out, because you make it all the way to the end of filming, which at that time was like 2.5 to 3 weeks of filming. There's no pay, there's no compensation for any of it unless you win. And so it's a big kick in the balls to spend all that time and then have absolutely nothing to show for. So at least if you make it to the end and you don't win, you get your thing, and then potentially you can sell it somewhere down the road or put it on the mantle, whatever the fuck you want to do with it. That's just honestly, I keep saying when I talk to people about it these days, is that the first season, while it was fun, we set a very poor precedent for makers following us, because you know, all other competition shows like that, like the people are compensated for their time, they get paid. It's just the person that wins gets paid more. But all of the makers in the first season set a poor precedence in the way that we were just like attention whores, basically, and we just needed all the attention, right, or wanted to be on TV or whatever the fuck. And so we were like, yeah, whatever, sign away our fucking firstborn child and all this shit, let's just go. And and not being compensated in any way was also part of that. And you know, to be fair, like, they didn't offer us anything, but I think typically there's usually if somebody's represented by an entertainment lawyer, then the entertainment lawyer would be like, whoa, 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 wait a second, what the fuck, back up. If these guys are the talent and the show is built around them, you fucking pay them. And so, but that didn't happen. And funny story, so they started inviting people back then to compete against the judges. I don't know if you guys ever saw any of those episodes. But they asked me to come back, and I was like, look, I would love to come back. It would be fun, but I can't afford to take that kind of time out of my shop. I have a business. I have a family I'm trying to take care of. So unless you can compensate me for my time out of the shop, I can't do it. And then the guy was like, well, we don't really pay the competitors. And I was like, yeah, I know. I've been on there twice.
That's the problem.
That is the fucking problem. And he's like, well, I'll talk to my bosses and see, or the producers, and see what they think. I never heard a thing back, so I guarantee that. Like, bah, fuck that guy. We can find another ding dong. We'll find another attention craving idiot to put on the show. No offense to anybody, but that's exactly what they're fucking thinking.
Another ding dong.
No offense to you, idiots.
Nope, I'm one of those idiots.
You know,
but here's the problem.
It's interesting because they talk to...
That's exactly what they do. They're thinking, and that's exactly what they're saying to each other. Fuck these guys. Because here's the problem. They're getting paid millions of dollars to not only make this show, but all the advertisement that they get from... They can afford to pay to compensate the people going onto the show and competing, and then the winner just gets paid more. They can do that. They can 100% afford that. They just don't, because they're assholes. Well,
all right, easy.
Hey, I'm allowed to be upset.
You're allowed to be upset. There's most likely a million other reasons. You know, it's like
no.
I will say that my friend, you know, John. I talked to Jonathan Porter often. I talked to him last night, and he had told me about when he was on. That was the first season.
Yep.
He had taken a gamble on being on that show to the point where his side job was being a farrier. And I'm not really telling anything out of school, but you know, he ended up losing a huge account. You know, when you're a farrier, you're at a place, you know, you're at a farm for a while. And, you know, you're regular, and they need to count on you. Yeah. And he lost a huge account because he took a gamble on Forge and Fire. And it was like, and I remember when he said, you know, we prepared for if I were to win the business. And he's just like, we lost a lot of revenue being on that show. It was like a gamble that we really we shouldn't have done. Mm. But, you know, look, it's also puts people, you know, if it wasn't for Forge and Fire, you wouldn't see anvils on TV, you know, except for
Bugs Bunny. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's true. Am I wrong?
You're quite right. I can't think of any other anvil on TV. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking oh, Bugs Bunny. And olive oil. Yeah, the whole scene. Yeah, all of them. You know, so.
Okay, cool. Okay, Brenmar Built Knives has also sent a question, and they do this via Instagram. So we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you got a question, DM us. Hey guys, another question about drill bits. I always have trouble drilling holes in blades that I've forged. Stock removal knives are never a problem. It's always the blades I've forged. I do all the normalizing and everything to anneal the blade. I've yet to find drill bits that work for more than a couple of blades. Is there some good bits that you would recommend? I'll spend the money, but I don't really need a full index. I only use 1/8 and 1/4 inch pins. Thanks, fellas. Mm. He's struggling to drill through forged blades, but doesn't seem to have that problem with stock removal blades.
Yeah. I would be curious if he's doing a subcritical anneal as part of his normalizing process. And a subcritical would be bringing the blade up to about 1250 and letting it soak in there for about an hour, 2 hours. I think it's a couple hours. If you look at Laren Thomas's book, Knife Engineering, he talks about subcritical anneals and what it does to the carbides. But basically, I think the short of it is that it transforms the carbides into a more amenable state that makes it super easy to drill and machine, grind, whatever you need to do, cut. And so I would maybe also add that subcritical anneal. He also doesn't say what kind of steel he's forging. I assume it's some sort of carbon steel. But if you're doing it with 5200 or 01, that is going to be a bitch to drill after you're done forging, even if you normalize it. So that would be my tip. But otherwise, drill, like, I don't know shit about drill. And here's the problem. Like, because I do all that stuff, I don't give a fuck about what kind of drill bits. I get secondhand drill bits from, like, the state surplus store, and I just sharpen them and keep using them. Like, I've never once thought about, what's the quality of this drill bit? Is it have cobalt, or is it tungsten carbide, or what is it? Like, none of that shit. Is it coated? I don't give a shit about any of that. I have no problem drilling.
What would you say the biggest, what would you say the differences between regular annealing and subcritical annealing are, or the characteristics?
I mean, a regular normalizing cycle, so you said that regular annealing versus subcritical annealing?
Well, like if somebody says, I annealed it. I annealed it. You're going to cool it down slowly.
Yeah.
What would be the difference between annealing something and a subcritical anneal?
For sure. Also, I just want to apologize if I'm jumping in and interrupting you guys. There is a slight delay on my side, and every once in a while it chirps out, and I'm not catching everything you're saying. So I'm okay with that. All right. And if I drop out, I bid you all adieu, and thank you for having me on. A normal anneal cycle is a very, very long, slow, and controlled anneal cycle. So you bring it up above or at critical, and then you let it cool down very slowly at like maybe 50 degrees or 100 degrees an hour, which is so slow. But the only way you can really do that is through a temperature-controlled kiln like the Evenheats. But it's just very time-consuming. You don't necessarily always need to do that, though. And I think I feel like I saw an article the other day discussing the potential merits between just normalizing versus fully annealing, because people used to think you have to people used to say, or still say probably, that you have to fully, or the best I guess, I don't know what to call it, the form or like state for the steel to be heat treated out of is a fully annealed state. But most people are not doing that, and we're getting great results. I've never done a full anneal on a knife. So it's a higher temperature, very long period of time. And then a subcritical anneal is like just barely at critical, just below critical, which is again from that 1250 to like maybe I think there are all different types of schedules, and I think another one that's in knife engineering is at 1385, but it's just above critical. It's about 50 degrees above critical, and then it's for a much shorter period of time, from anywhere from a half an hour, 45 minutes to a couple hours. Did I do it?
There you go.
Okay.
Look at that. Cool. What do you think, Craig?
Well, I think if you're looking for an even heat.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to
knifetalk.net/heat. That will take you to Soul Ceramics, where it automatically apply a $75 discount and free shipping in the US. And I believe they've got some ready to ship. So they're distributors of Even Heats, basically. They've got some. Go get some.
Last thing on drill bits, and this is something I learned in the last metal shop I was in. If you start squealing and you start to, you know, you're pushing and nothing's happening, if you too much friction, you're going to ruin
the material squealing, not you personally.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, I just saw the pictures of miraculous clams.
You know what? I just looked at those pictures
Jesus
too.
Jesus Christ.
I recognize a few of them.
Oh, you son of a bitch, you. It's something else. Those clams have got me all fired up. Talking about, but if you have your drill bit has too much friction and you ruin the temp, you ruin the heat treatment of your drill bit, it's ruined. And then you can also, what also happens if you keep going, you can almost harden that spot that you're drilling in the steel.
Oh, for sure.
And then, you know, every goddamn bit you throw in is going to be garbage. So you got to really go slowly, and then lots of lube, right, Craig?
Lots of lube.
And then also know that forged scale is harder than the steel. So if you got a lot of forged scale on there, you got to notice that flaky carbon is going to be hard. So,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on using WD-40 as a drilling lubricant?
It's fine.
I did it once in a Instagram video and got lit right up. Apparently, it's a no-no. I was told. Anyway,
these fucking armchair machinists are like these guys sitting on their fat asses, telling you, WD-40. Yeah, whatever it takes. You want to use vegetable juice? You go ahead.
Vegetable juice.
Yeah, get one of them clams. Rub your clam on there.
Okay, enough clam talk. Jeff, take the next question for us.
I'm sorry, but I almost wish you didn't send me that picture of the video, because the fucking clams are nuts. It's like a plate of vaginas, for Christ's sakes. Sorry.
There's a reason they're an aphrodisiac.
Damn right, for too. Christ's sakes. Jesus Christ, that's like the national flag of Lesbos. Fucking
Uh-oh. This is gonna take a second.
That could well be the title.
That's not gonna be the title.
Brilliant.
All right, there you go. That's for you, Cypress. We love you. Scarhill Blade says, "Hey, sexy, I'm reorganizing my shop, and I'm thinking about catty cornering my forge to save room. Since I realistically only have access from the front, it's a bare stud and plywood interior, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts on how or if I should fireproof it. Thank you." Oh God.
Well, first off, what's catty cornering?
He's like sticking in the corner. He's going to make a ledge. Sounds like he's going to make a ledge in the corner of the shop, on the wall.
Right. Okay, I got you. But it's a bare stud and plywood interior. I'm curious if you have thoughts on it and how should fireproof. I don't know. I don't know is the answer. I did have an even heat in the corner before, but obviously they're very well insulated. A forge would be a completely different story. Sheet steel, I'd imagine. Cover the walls with that. I don't know. Mareko, do you have any of your forges in the corner?
I don't. But if I was, I would try to build a heat shield kind of similar to what you see with fireplaces. And usually there's like a panel of sheet metal that's it's like assembled with standoffs that actually have it off the wall just a little bit. And usually then behind it, there's more heat and fire protective material. And it doesn't have to be the whole corner. It's, you know, just where, you know, in that area. But ultimately, like realistically, if the forge is well insulated, it shouldn't be getting too crazy hot. I'd be curious to know how big it is and how close to the wall he's actually planning on putting it. But yeah, heat shielding it in some way, as well as putting some on top of the studs, some fireproof. So whether that's like concrete board or something like that, that you would use, or green board that you would use to help, in just general construction, making things more fire resistant or fireproof, will help to shield that area behind it to keep it safe. What do you got, Jeff?
I'm a wheels guy. I want to be able to wheel the forge around. I don't want to be too tight to the wall. So
yeah,
I do whatever it takes to kind of make sure it's well ventilated. You know, I don't want to like, and I'm goddamn sure as hell not burning this shop down. So I would probably figure out a way to make like a little cart, maybe a little cart that you can wheel outside. I mean, a lot of people do that. I know that John Ariani has, John Cliff have tons of forges, and every time they wheel it outside because it's just pumping so much. I get really worried about forges in indoors, because if you're not well ventilated, you can get bad problems. I've told this story of a number of years ago. We had Darren Fisher, who's a good friend of mine. This is a long time ago when we had a shop. What's so funny? Nothing? All right.
I know where this is going, because you've told this story a few times.
Well, it was freezing, and we were teaching this class at my friend's shop. We had all the goddamn windows closed, and we turned the forges on to warm the shop up, and we almost killed Darren Fisher. Like we didn't have enough ventilation. The shop was freezing. And there was almost like when he went to the bathroom, he came back, he felt like there was a wall of like carbon monoxide, visible wall of carbon monoxide when he walked in. And then when we were cleaning up, he ended up, he ended up throwing up on the roof just because he was so not prepared for the lack of oxygen. And you don't even notice it. You get slowly get like very comfortable. So anytime I forge, I never forge without the doors open, and I get really worried about, making sure there's enough ventilation so I'm not, slowly like going to sleep. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to go to sleep when you're forging.
For sure.
Because you go to sleep.
Yeah. Carbon monoxide poisoning is a real issue.
Yeah, so.
And how would you counteract that? Is that literally just by having an open window, open door, just getting fresh air in too?
It actually has to be more than that.
You should have like a...
Sorry. It's a fucking delay.
It should be like a cross, some sort of cross ventilation. I have like a vent that I use, and then I have this big door open, and, you really want to make sure that you have plenty of... You're venting it.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yep.
All right.
Paul Jansen. Go for it, Mareko.
Paul Jansen. Is Paul Jansen next? I see Cutthroat Australia.
Go ahead. Do Cutthroat Australia.
Oh, sorry. Yes,
yeah. Question to the group. How do you respond to a random person on Instagram who sends you a pic of someone else's work? Zero description. Just the image. I don't respond. I require words for communication. In more words than also just hi.
Oh, fucking hi is good. I mean, I'm saying good as in like that's the classic, like I ain't responding back.
Just waiting for you to answer.
Yeah. It's like, hi, how are you? Good. Thanks for asking. Oh, Jesus Christ. It's like that's where Hey Cuties. If you listen to the show for the first time, that's where Hey Cutie came from. Is you get these DMs from these like porn bots saying Hey Cutie and stuff like that. And that's why when people say Hey Cutie. There's a definitely like it's everything. It seems as though it's DMing is like a fishing expedition. Like you're just trying to, everyone's trying to figure out different way. Everyone's trying to figure out different ways to catch that fish.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. It's a weird one. And I think don't spend too much time trying to work out what people are on about on Instagram. Just forget them and move on to the next one. I think it's the only way. Okay, owl woodwork. Apparently, you can't put stainless cladding directly over a non-stainless core because of something called carbon migration, and it will negatively affect the core steel. I'm told you need a barrier layer of nickel. If this is true, how are guys like Teruyasu something something
Fujiwara
making such well-renowned stainless clad blue super knives? I guess my question is, stainless cladding, why does everybody say something different? Is there an answer? Are all these things myths? Mareko, what do you think?
I mean, you can do it. And Fujiwara is not making his own steel, as far as I'm aware. He's using these super blue and all this other kind of claddings. But those are typically being made in a commercial environment that have vacuum purges or some sort of purging system to help protect the materials as they are being welded together. I don't know what to tell you. Takafu is the company that makes those. For a long time, Takafu steels weren't available in the United States because it was kind of a, you know, it was so highly regarded and kind of a terroir thing. It was only made in Japan, and so they're like, all right, this steel is so great, and it's the highest performing and outcompetes so many other steels. It's only going to be made in Japan and only available to Japanese makers. And only in the last maybe 5 or 10 years, that's changed. I think about 10 years ago, it started getting imported in the United States, or people with special relationships with those companies were able to import it, but that was it. And now you can readily find it. Places online, but yeah, they're working in a commercial environment where they can safely and weld those materials together without losing the carbon to migration, at least through the welding process. Now people are still forging them, and nobody's saying that carbon migration isn't happening in that process. And it will. It's and you can weld stainless to carbon core. It's just whether or not you want that effect. It's more about making an educated decision rather than just slapping some shit together. Because maybe you want that look. And sometimes it does look really cool to see that carbon migration from the carbon steel core material to the stainless. Sometimes you don't. So there you go.
Cool. You're not going to get a better answer from me. Jeff, anything on that?
Nothing. Zero. I got nothing to say. I find it fascinating. I would talk to, look, just pointing in the direction of guys who do a lot of Sanmai, Greg Sims, Noah Vachon, Steve Pellegrino. Those guys are all doing a lot of Sanmai. So I'd ask them. Yeah. Whoops. Sorry.
Not with a simple hi.
Yeah. Just write hi. Yeah. Hi.
Yeah.
See what they say. Okay.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
Do it now. We got another question in from Philly Knife Co. So odd question maybe. Do you know what causes temper coloring? Is it just the heat, or is it the heat and exposure to oxygen? In theory, one could temper in oil heated to 400 to 500, depending on desired temp, and it would be very consistent. Could you use heated oil to return temper colouring after finishing as a surface treatment or colouring? So I think he's talking about those sort of rainbow colours that you get after heat treat.
For stainless.
For stainless, yes, yeah. To me, it doesn't sort of. It's very much a surface thing for me. It doesn't seem to last. It's not a permanent thing. But what you guys think?
All those things. I mean, even the yellow. I actually, when I made some.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hammers. I kept the. I had some tempered, and they look great, golden, and it comes off over time. I mean, doesn't stick around. And then I've been doing lately with the AEBL. I've been having really nice colors, and I've been keeping it as much as I can, just because, just you know, I figure why not, and you know, it, you can scrub it off with you know, whatchamacallit, Scotch-Brite. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Now, I think it is something to do with the oxygen, though, because when I wrap a blade in foil, I do that thing that some people do, and I'm not sure how true it is, that if you put a little bit of tissue paper in there, that will then combust and burn off any extra oxygen that's in the packet. I don't know if it's required or not. I don't know. But generally, I put little balls, and I put a few in along the blade.
Yeah,
I just do this just for my own entertainment, really, because right. When it come out, you get different patterns. And I find where I put the
little balls.
Where I put the tissue balls, you get almost like a little sort of explosion mark, and it looks really cool, and that's the only reason I do it. But yeah, it comes off almost immediately.
Yeah.
Why do those colors happen? Why do or even just temper colors, Mareko?
I mean, I can't give the best answer, but it is from the material.
Give a shitty answer. Give a shitty answer.
Give a shitty answer. I'll give you the best I can, which is it is a result of being exposed to oxygen. So if you're removing oxygen from the equation by submerging it in oil or something else, then you're not going to really experience that. And so there are some materials that are used for like gun bluing and, or salt baths and stuff like that that are used for oxidizing materials. And coloring them intentionally, but I don't think that oil would work. I think you would have to, at least as I understand it, that it is a result of the oxygen exposure. So
yeah,
I could be fucking wrong though.
I'm pretty
there's
sure
a terrible
is.
Answer.
No. You're not wrong. You're 100% right.
You can get Sharpies in all different colors these days. So if that's your bag, finish with a Sharpie. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have lots of other bits to do, ladies and gentlemen. We have listener feedback. We have rookie moves. Like everyone sent in a lot of rookie moves. And we have why me? Why does this always happen to me? So,
okay, you set one of them up. I'm going to tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. Lawrence is a good guy. He's got everything you could possibly need as a knife maker, whether it's steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, even kilns and more. He's got everything there. They're also the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. And they've got a deal where if you buy 10, you get 10% off. So basically one free in every 10. It's a cool deal. Go take a look. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They're also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. They'll have anything you could possibly need. Jeff, what we got?
Let's start in with a little listener feedback. Listener feedback, if you listen to us and you're wanting to you want to contribute, if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, you can shoot us your DMs or your listener feedback or questions or whatever, dilemmas and stuff like that. So, and then on Wednesdays, usually Wednesdays or so, I'll pipe up on in the stories and ask for, you know, something. So this one comes from Carly from Damasteel. Carly from Damasteel. Hey guys, great show this week. Was thinking about some of your social media queries from listeners. We were talking about, I guess last week, I think it was Fox River Blades was talking about growing. It was an Instagram issue and social media and being banned.
Being flagged as offensive weapons. Yeah.
So she said, I was thinking about some of your social media queries from your listeners, and I wanted to mention hashtags that are shadow banned. Makers need to double check what hashtags they're throwing on things, because if Instagram doesn't support the hashtag, no one will see their stuff. Have a great week, Carly. So Carly's in for you guys. Good call.
Good call.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Like what some, you know, knife porn and all that stuff. And like all that stuff.
Hashtag clam pics. Probably wouldn't go down too well. Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. Casual Cal says, hey, guys, in the lump episode, you were talking about tennis arm and forging. My forging teacher always says that you should not put your thumb on the hammer handle, but around it. Because if you put your thumb on the handle, more shocks from the forging process go up than your arm. How do you guys hold your hammer? Thanks.
Two-handed.
Oh, look at you. Striker.
Striker.
Big striker. Yeah. But I don't think that tennis elbow comes from... Tennis elbow usually comes from... tendonitis usually comes from if you're doing something with your arm that you don't normally do. Like the time I had got tennis elbow was from... You know, spending in the early days when I was working at the Center for Mental Arts, and I didn't have a lot of experience with tongs and using my managing hand, putting it in positions and moving in positions, almost like a violin, you know, playing a violin or something. It was like I was in these positions that I wasn't normally used to. So that's why I didn't get tennis elbow on my hammer hand ever. I've gotten it on my managing hand. So, but I hold.
So do you think you'd get over tennis elbow by repetitively doing things? So you'd strengthen the muscles, whatever it may be.
I don't know. It goes away, and definitely those armbands are great. But I don't know. It was when I got it; it was a total drag, and it would like last for 6 weeks or something like that.
So oh boy,
I hated it. It's not fun. It's not nice. It's not nice at all. But those neoprene bands are great. However, when I do hold the hammer, I hold it. I do the Hoffy method sometimes, and then I hold it, with your thumb around it a lot, and that's the end of that. How do you hold your hammer there, Mareko?
Same. I'm a thumb around. I don't know how. I don't feel like. I don't know how I'd feel comfortable with my thumb on the spine, I guess, of the hammer, on the back of the hammer while swinging. I feel like it wouldn't feel very secure.
Well, it subconsciously makes you not want to use the rebound of the anvil. You know, part of the idea behind the rebound is it's helping you save some energy bringing the hammer back on your second hit. So if you're your thumb down, it's almost like you're doing one hit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really like it's not efficient towards, you know, taking advantage of the rebound from your anvil to kind of bring it back for your next. You're supposed to like be efficient in your use that energy. Legacy Blade says, well, it's finally happened to me after a few years of making knives. A guy perfectly happy with the knife upon completion, the completion pictures. But when he gets it, he says, well, I wish we would have done a more ornate handle, even though he told me to just do whatever I wanted. When someone says that, I usually say something simple but tasteful, but I don't end up way outside their expectations. Quickly tap my memory on all the times I've heard you guys talk about this thing on Tough Dilemmas and went straight to what do you want to do? Do you want to send it back? So he's saying to the guy, what do you want to do? You want to send it back? I'll refund your money. Knowing I could just sell it on my page, the conversation quickly turns into him saying, no, I'll keep it. I guess I should have been more specific. Yeah, you should have. Come at me, bro. Those dilemmas, keep those dilemmas flowing, and they're entertaining and actually helpful. But that is interesting. You know, you sometimes get a customer who says, just express yourself. And then it's not really what they wanted. Have you ever had those situations?
Yeah, I do think slightly different now. So basically, I do very few custom orders, but the ones that I do, they'll have a complete sort of 3D render of how the knife will look, right down to the handle material, liner colors, and all the rest of it, just so they know exactly what they'd be getting. So there was a bit of sort of upfront work to get all the sort of templates ready so I could make a mock-up very quickly. But now, you know, so literally within 3 or 4 minutes, I could give it any handle color, any, you know, sort of grain structure of the handle, any liner color and all that, and just swap them out, any pins, any pattern pins, and just swap them all out. So, they've got a very good idea of what they'll be getting. When somebody just says, do what you think, if you're not giving them any feedback, you're almost giving them license to be disappointed, maybe. I don't know. It's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in that position, Mareko?
God, the only one I can really think about or remember it wasn't that exact situation. Like it was all the customer's choices, but even still, after they got it, they're like, "Ooh, I don't know about this handle material. It seems kind of loud." Because it was like this blue dyed, some sort of burl, spalted burl of some sort. It was beautiful. I thought it was beautiful. But it, I guess he wasn't happy with it when he got it, even though he found the piece and he paid for the piece. And I sent him progress photos the whole time through.
Oh.
And so, yeah, when he got it, he wasn't happy about it. But maybe he was blaming it on the fucking knife when really he had buyer's remorse. And so that could have been an issue too, but I don't know. I think if I was in that position and I could easily sell it, I'd be like, fuck it, send it back. I don't want somebody walking around with something they're not happy, or especially from me, like, cause I've been in that position of kind of like that buyer's remorse situation. And if I feel comfortable that I could sell it again, then I'd just be like, whatever, I guess, hopefully this doesn't happen too often. Which usually it doesn't, but if you can sell it, yeah, just I would just take it back and fucking sell it to somebody else. Put it on the website or a newsletter, and somebody who's pumped about it is gonna fucking buy it. That's what I want. I want people out in the world that's super pumped about my work and about owning it.
That's the tricky thing about customs is when people have their idea of what they think it's gonna look good. Mm-hmm. It's like going to a restaurant and saying, you know, I want this on the menu, but I want you to swap sides with this, and you're kind of building your own food. You're building your own meal, which is different from the idea of what the restaurant wants. I mean, I get that all the time. Like, I have one guy who just wants ornate, and it's like we're going down a road here that like the meter's running, and you know you're making decisions based on what you think, not what's going to work well. And I don't know, it's one of those things. When I was working in a restaurant, I was talking to this woman who was one of the servers, and she just came off a table, and the table, they were so rude to her. They were so rude to her and awful. And she said to me, they're such assholes. I just can't believe it. And I would say, look, you open your doors to the public. What's the percentage of people who are unreasonable in the public? Let's say 50% of people of the public are unreasonable. And when you open your doors to them, what are you going to get? 30%? 30% of those unreasonable people are going to show up. All right, you got one of those 30%. So this happens. You know, you open your doors up, and you know, every so often, they all can't be the greatest customer of all time. Sometimes they're just like, they just suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good point. Okay. What else we got?
We have rookie moves.
Okay, I like
rookie moves. Yeah. So last week, Nice Handmade Knives, who has come up with awesome bits for us, came up with the idea of asking the listeners some of your rookie moves, and the listeners really responded. So Nice Handmade Knives, you're 2 for 2 on good bits. Really, really very high level. So rookie mistakes, people sending in their rookie mistakes. Number one comes from Feral Boy Knives. Here's a rookie mistake. Everything is hot all the time. Don't pick up shit unless you know it's cold.
Yes, I did that with the frying pan yesterday. I knew I'd just taken it out of the oven and I'd put it on the top of the hob. I knew it was hot, and within 3 seconds of putting it on there, I then instinctively just picked it up again. Burned all the calluses in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to put that shit on the floor too. The forging stuff, it's like, it's shocking how hot things stay.
Sure. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Treat everything as if it's hot. Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah. Along those
Michael
lines.
Michael Berg. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say along those lines, when you're forging on the press, sometimes I completely forget how much heat those dies absorb. And grabbing stuff off barehanded when it's actually like 800 degrees doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
That's another thing to be careful of, folks.
Dyes get hot. This reminds me, do you want to hear an Uri Hoffi joke?
Go for it. All right. Yeah.
Uri Hoffi, one of the great, he said this joke years ago. And I'm saying this because, I don't know, it works with the whole clam thing. And I got no choice. I'm going to say it in his accent. Uri Hoffi, 80-something, got no leg. Living his best life out in Israel, doing his thing, legend. He goes, blacksmith is at the shop, and he's very poor. And his wife comes in and she says, "Husband, we must eat." And the blacksmith says, "Wife, we have no money. I must work." And she said, and the wife says, "You must eat. I'm gonna prepare you some dinner." And then "We have no money. We have no money." So then she sits on the horn of the anvil, and he says, "Wife, what are you doing?" And she says, "I'm preparing you dinner." Because the horn of the anvil gets hot when you're working. Nothing? You fucking nothing. Guys? Nothing. That was a Uri Hoffi joke. She's warming up her pussies. That's the joke. What the fuck?
Jesus Christ. That was terrible.
That was his joke.
Terrible.
He used to say it's just bake. Like he's the best, the worst jokes. He would say the "What's the difference between a?" Never mind. I'm not gonna do it. I have a whole list of he's. He used to tell me the. I call him my favorite bad comedian. I loved every terrible joke he said. So that's that rookie mistake was telling me that fucking joke. Okay. So Michael Bergfalk says, "Here's a rookie move. One of my biggest rookie moves was as a newer knife maker is thinking roasting the Legends of Knife Talk podcast would be funny to everyone, not just me." We fucked up his name on an episode, and he was kind of like joshing with us to it doesn't matter. I'm with you, Michael. You're the man. Will Miller says, "Here's two big rookie mistakes. Number two, letting the gas run for a minute or two before lighting the forge. The resulting fireball burned away all the hair off my arm and elbow up to my eyebrows. And then number one is letting my wife know exactly how much I had spent on equipment." Rookie moves. Rookie yeah. moves. Here's another EDC. Have you guys ever had one of them? You know, you buy something and you're afraid to tell your wife.
Oh, completely.
Oh yeah, you. Yeah. What was your last? What was your last one that you were really embarrassed to tell her?
Was it?
This wasn't me, but a friend of mine would often leave the house with an empty guitar case, telling his wife, who's going off to get his guitar repaired.
Oh my god!
Go out, buy a new guitar, put it in the case, come back in. That's the way.
Oh man! Have you ever done that, Mareko? You don't seem like the kind of guy that you know, break something to your wife and buy something you'd regret it.
Yeah, don't really have a lot of extra money laying around to do that, so no.
I'm going to go see the Knicks. I'm going to go see the Knicks and the Hornets play in Madison Square Garden. My friend and I are going to go to a steakhouse and then go to the Knicks game.
Oh, did you get one of those discount tickets, those $30 tickets?
No, dude, we're paying out the note. He got floored.
Well, this is the out. I was giving you the out.
Let me tell you the fucking story.
Okay.
So he's like, "I found floor seats," and he sent me the price, and the price is a little bit more than I wanted to spend, but I really wanted to go. And I just told my wife, I was just like, "Look, I'm going to the Knicks game. Here are the prices of the tickets. We're also going to be buying steaks. That's cool, right?" And she says, "Of course, you work hard. You're entitled to a little bit of fun." I thought maybe I shouldn't tell her. And then I was just like, fuck it. Just before we bought them, I'm just like, "Listen, we're getting floor seats. We're like eight rows from the floor, but we got floor seats." And I was like, it could have been one of them. "Oh, don't worry about it. You know, we're just going to..."
Yeah. I got to be fair, my wife is pretty awesome with my indulgent whims. So I can't complain at all.
Yeah. All right. EDC Rear Gearhouse says, "Here's a rookie mistake. I was doing a rock carved pattern on a heavily internally milled brass scales. And I had lots of contours on the presentation side, thinking that it could be as much force with titanium. I definitely took it down too far and ended up with a nice peekaboo hole from the top side through to the damn scales." So it went too far with the EDC, went too far. Yeah. Benjamin Mullen says, "My biggest rookie mistake was trying to use a leaf spring I bought instead of using good blade steel to start out. The spring steel wasn't 5160 and it was very hard to work with. The spring also cost me more per foot than 8670 from Pops. I should have bought blade steel."
Should have bought blade. And you know what you should have bought? Dharma Steel. Go to dharmasteel.se, register an account. You'll get 10% off as well. And we all know what Dharma Steel is. It's amazing. Stainless Damascus. Beautiful, beautiful patterns. They've got a whole bunch of patterns now. Go take a look. dharmasteel.se. Remember, you get 10% off by registering Knife Talk as the promo code once you have an account.
You want to do a couple more?
Let's do a couple more, yeah.
Hummer Knives, our friend Hummer Knives, says, my biggest rookie move, I quit my job after less than a year of making knives. I made 3 or 4 knives in that year, and they all sold. I thought I hit the gold mine. It worked out for our family during COVID because I could stay home and take care of our boy. But oh boy, do I cringe thinking about how I gave up that steady paycheck to get this hobby off the ground.
Yeah, it's a question we get a lot of, isn't it? People saying, you know, when should I go full time? And we always say the answer is different for everybody. Everybody.
Pig Iron Forge says, this is for the rookie mistake segment. I gave up my first carving. I was making my first carving set. The knife was no problem, and I've never made a fork before. It seemed pretty simple to forge out the basic shape and cut a space to make the prongs. So my dumbass took an angle grinder, cut a thin notch, and then threaded it through the belt. So you didn't understand what he's saying. So he cut a notch with the grinder, and he stuck it through the belt. Stuck it through the belt of his moving grinder. Thinking that I could just grind away the excess. No problem. Everything is going fine. So I apply more pressure to grind it faster. And when I caught the belt on the connection and split it lengthwise at the adhesive, so one side of the belt was in a loop spinning at 70%, while the other side, which was one end was still attached, kept turning into a 72-inch long whip. Before I knew what happened, nice. I'd been smacked in the head and face 20 times.
After
covering up in the fetal position for a second on the floor of my shop before I realized what was going on, I crawled under the table that my grinder was on. And then I blindly reached up to turn it off.
Oh, Jesus.
Please tell me he's got some sort of camera there. I'd love to see that.
Looking back,
I was imagining that the tine of the fork was going to ping off with the vibration of the belt, but that's far better.
Looking back, the funniest part of me was after every smack, the belt would just dip itself into the cooling bucket and wet itself just a bit. Dad more snap to each slap.
Oh, 20 wet slaps. That's amazing.
Pig Iron, you win. Pig Iron, you win. And then Brigham Kendall says, Mir's a rookie mistake. I got the new true tilt from Mr. House and had my platen tilted really far back, and I wasn't paying attention and let my belly hit the bottom of the wheel on a 36 crit going super fast. I didn't notice it until I went down inside and I saw it took off a few layers of my apron. Thank goodness for my Moreco Banff apron. So
wow.
Sticking that gut in.
Yeah. Jeez. I think it's Brian Haas now, not Brian House, by the way.
Why do you say that?
He's just bought himself a big Haas. Big CNC thing.
Right. That was a CNC joke, ladies and germs.
It was.
that was my Uri Hoffi joke. was way better than that joke. That I can tell you that.
Whilst we're talking machinery, Jeff, tell us about your grinder.
Holy shit. I have the Broadbeck 2x72 grinder, and I was putting it to work. I've been putting it to work every day. It is a great grinder made by knife makers for knife makers and woodworkers and metalworkers and everybody else. It goes horizontally, vertically, tons of attachments, very user-friendly. All the attachments also work on most other chassis of other grinder companies. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code Knife Talk 200, you will get $200 off their grinder packages. And if you put in Knife Talk 100, you get $100 off their surface belt grinder attachment. You get $100 off their leather sewing machine and their sharpening system. They have a new sharpening system that looks great. So go get yourself one of them Broadbeck Ironworks 2x72 grinders and stop playing. There you go.
There you go. Shall we go back to a few questions?
We can do that. We also have why me, why does this always happen to me? We're filled. The listeners have been doing good, man. The listeners have been giving us some good shit.
Yeah. I just can't stop thinking about that grinder belt going around.
Dude.
Dipping itself in water.
I got to tell you that the only time something similar to that happened to me was with a Scotch-Brite belt. I was cleaning up an oyster knife, and then I had the tip of the blade facing up, and it caught the thing, shot the thing right down, but it also tore it up and it was flapping away. The good thing about those belts is when they do tear, usually it's one tear and it's it, but you don't normally get the slap. So
yeah. If anything's gonna grab, it's gonna be a Scotch Brite belt as well. They can
brutal. So whatever you want to do.
Okay, yeah, let's do some of these why me then.
Why me? Why does this always happen to me? So if you want to send in your why me, basically you put up a question for us that happens to you all the time, and we kind of crime scene investigate what the problem is and they figure out what the problem is. So Co Blade says, why me? Why does this always happen to me? Why is it every time I try to clean my plunge lines, I end up taking a nick out of one side, and I screw them up? I already know it's a skill level. Awesome show, guys. Never miss a week. Plunge lines, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm. Yep. It's that whole thing of chasing the plunge line. Do one wrong, have to do the other side, and chasing. Before you know it, it's way back on itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Experience. It happens to everyone, I'm sure.
What do you think about plunge lines? What are some of the problems that people have with plunge lines, Mareko?
Is that towards me?
You there? Yeah, Mareko.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What do you think about
plunge lines?
It cut out for a second. I don't really do plunge lines. But the few times I have, I found that the Trizec belts, actually the structured abrasive with a little bit of height to them, actually, and that coupled with a set of carbide file guides really helped to, one, limit and keep things even on both sides, but also because of the height of that abrasive, you're cutting the face as well as the wall of the plunge at the same time to clean them up and get it nice and square in there. But I don't know. Other than that, like I've seen people use like die polisher stones or die maker stones and other. I can't even really think what else people are using to clean up plunges, but doing it very carefully and meticulously by hand just to make sure that they're not messing things up and constantly chasing back and forth. They just slow down and work a little more carefully in the first place.
One thing I've noticed, and this is a little tiny little thing, is a lot of times on your platen may or may not be the exact size as your belt. So if there's a little overhang on your grinder belt,
yeah,
you'll have a more rounded plunge line.
Yeah.
So if one's on one, if one's a little proud of the plunge, one's proud of the platen on one side and one's not proud on the platen on the other side, and you look, you're going to see one's got a little bit of rounded, and the other one's a little bit tight. So you have to be very aware when you're finishing off, doing those plunge lines and finishing them off, that you're making sure that where the edge that you're going up to on the platen, you have the same amount of, you know, belt either sticking over or not sticking over as the other side. Because that's the one thing that happens that I try to be aware of. And it doesn't dawn on me until I look down. I'm like, oh, yeah, the plunge line's a little bit weird. And it's because I have the different sides have different the belts on different sides of the. You know what the fuck I said, for Christ's sake. Yeah. God.
And again, the radius of your platen as well. If it's not identical either side and you're using a really sort of lightweight belt that's got give, it'll just wrap around the shape of that platen as well. So, yeah. Same thing.
This is still the number one knife-related podcast on this German-infested planet, whether you like it or not, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't like what I said, find another one. You're not going to find one better than this. That's for sure. All right. I don't know why I said that. Plumley Knives says, why me? Why does this always happen to me? Why do I always get metal slivers on the bottom of my feet? I try to clean off after leaving the shop, and I take my shoes off at the door. And when I come home, I try to take my dirty clothes to the laundry room right away. Yet I always seem to be getting slivers on the bottom of my feet. Normally, this wouldn't be a big problem, but I've had diabetes since I was a young child, and 20 plus years later, these slivers are more than just an annoyance. Any tip how to keep metal pieces out of my house? Thanks again. You're the best. Oh, what the fuck? plump.
Is he wearing shorts? And they're just getting down that little gap on the side of his shoes. You know, I generally wear trousers, long pants, as you might call right. them, and make sure that, you know, they overhang that little, you know, that little bit where your socks are showing.
You wear those fucking shoes still, right?
Your orthopedic Reeboks.
Still, I think I'm on my fourth pair, I think. I love them.
Shoes right there.
I would love to see an orthopedic Reeboks commercial made by Craig, all about his shoes.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Sparks flying.
Yeah. It could be the new Jordans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I need to get my clam out, I wear these shoes. You know.
You mock them. I've never fallen over in them. They're oil resistant. Uh-huh. They're awesome.
Yeah, oil resistant. That's the number one thing you worry about, right? No. What do you ever get metal slivers, Recco?
I never do. I'm actually surprised
at your fingers?
Maybe every once in a while, but not very often. I would expect there to be more slivers because I wash my work clothes with just the rest of my regular clothes. I'm always like, oh god, this is gonna be bad. I'm gonna end up with slivers in my underwear, but I haven't had any problems, or I like it. I don't know. One way or the other. Who knows? But it's never bothered me.
Clam. I mean,
gooch.
Well, when you say slivers, it's interesting because you get slivers from a couple different things.
Okay.
And the only time I was ever getting real slivers was back in the day when we were using a lot of die grinders and we were cleaning welds on railings. Like, we were trying to get, you know, a lot of material out, and we weren't using grinders. We were using, you know, the carbide burrs on a, you know, die grinder. And we would get sprayed with slivers, and I would get them in my fingers, and I would get them in my clothes. But I don't get slivers with a grinder, and I don't really get slivers, maybe slivers when you're drilling. But I always wear an apron. I always have my shoe. Make sure that my shoes are... You know, my pants are over the outsides of my shoes. I think maybe you might want to consider longer boots and like boot cut jeans or something like that, where you're kind of making sure shit doesn't go down there. I don't understand why you would get them the bottoms of your feet, unless you're changing your shoes in the shop. I don't know, man. I would be pissed if I had like to get shit out of my feet from working in the shop.
Yeah. Yeah, strange one. You know what we haven't told everybody about?
Tell me.
TexasFarrierSupply.com. Everything you need as a knife maker, even if you're a farrier or a bladesmith or a blacksmith, whatever you want to call yourself, you're using metal, head on over to TexasFarrierSupply.com, and they sell Indasa Rhino-Wet, which is the sandpaper of the champions. It's the stuff to use. It saves you time, saves you money. They've got all the grits they could possibly need. Head on over to TexasFireSupply.com, use KnifeTalk10 at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. So not just the Indasa Rhino-Wet, which you obviously need to fill your cart with, but lots of other stuff too. So go take a look.
I have to finish off one last why me. Why does this always happen to me? This is Brigham Kendall once again, champion. I'm saying this as he is a champion. He's always been a supporter, good guy. We're going to tell this story. And we're going to slap him on the back and say, you win. Why me? Why does this always happen? Why does this always happen to me? I was in the break room all by myself at a non-break time, so I let loose a fart. Next thing I know, a whole department comes in celebrating someone's birthday, and they all start looking at me like I committed a war crime. Can't a guy just fart in peace? Always happens. Brigham Kendall. He's smoking people out.
Yeah, fart in the lift as you leave. That's the gift. I do have a lift story, actually. So when we were back in Wales, we went to this kids resort place, you know, it's a soft play and all this kind of stuff there. And to get to one of the levels of soft play, there was a lift.
An elevator.
So my wife goes in the elevator with the kids. There wasn't enough room for me as well. So I said, well, I'll take the stairs. So I ran up the stairs. The lift was still closing. So when the doors opened, I'm there with a stupid, goofy face, like, rah, like that. It wasn't them. Oh, it was the wrong left. So this family was in there, just saw this crazy bloke that rah as the doors opened. But thankfully the other lift opened almost immediately and everybody just laughed and I just felt like a right dick.
That's lift stories, eh? That's great.
Lift stories.
I thought that was going
to
be.
Look, before we go on to an after show party, there's a question here that I want to grab. We did this years ago, but I think it'd be good to refresh. EDC Gearhouse says, "What's everyone's death row meal? Anything you'd like? Be specific." I mean, we did this years and years ago. It'd be good to know if it's changed. Jeff, death row meal. You know, anything you want.
Mine's gonna blow because my wife and kid are out. They're visiting Hillary's parents, and I've been home alone yesterday and today. And you'd think that I would be doing death row meals now, but it's like the lamest of the lame. Like I had strawberries and kombucha last night watching fucking Namor. Oh, some fuck. Bullshit. I would probably say my death row meal. It would probably be a steak, medium rare, hash browns, cream spinach, probably like that, like an old school Peter Luger's steakhouse situation. But then you start to think about like, you know, other things and Asian food and stuff like that. I'll go with the classic steakhouse, and then
sauced. Any sauce with the steak?
I mean, if you're a fucking pussy, yeah, sure. What? I mean, come on.
Really?
Well-seasoned steak, sauce. What are you, nuts? Salt and pepper, baby. Okay. Yeah, I'll go with that. I'm not going to change it up.
Morocco, death row meal.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the best meals I've ever had. And I think one of the best I always reflect on was when I was visiting my wife before we got married. And she was teaching in South Korea. And the city she lived in had this great beef barbecue place. And they're all about like the grills in the middle of the table and everything's cooked like right there in front of you. And they have this like spread of accoutrements of all these different sides and different things you can put together. And it was so good. And it was actually one of the first meals I had when I went and visited her. It was a 5-week stay. So she's like, before I left, she was like, is there anywhere else you want to try to eat again before you leave? And I was like, I want to go back to that steak restaurant. And so we went there and it didn't fail. It was so good. And I don't know even what the cut was. But basically you start with like a big, thick chunk of steak and you sear all the sides, like the grill's ripping hot. And then you cut it in half, and then you sear that fresh side, and then you cut it in half, and you keep breaking it down till you get down to these little bite-sized pieces. And it is so good with all the different stuff they have there. I would love to have that. If I was about to die, I'd be happy to eat that for sure.
You and I went to one of those places with Tim Musig, remember?
Yeah, right.
Prince.
Similar to that, yeah.
Tim, really good. Yeah, Japan, yeah. Korean barbecue is good stuff. What do you think, Craig? I bet you're salivating, your clams wet right now thinking about what you're doing.
I got a wet clam. No. Do you know what it is? I think like an Indian food.
Really?
I miss it when I'm back in France. I miss Indian food so much because it's, you know, it's everywhere in the UK. You can get it easily, but here in France they don't do spice very well at all. They do very good rich food and that kind of stuff. But when it comes to spice, they don't really do it well. So, you know, I cook a little bit of spice at home, but I'm not the greatest. So something like a lamb jalfrezi or something like that, something like peppers and, you know, the type that makes you sweat, but really, really tasty. So, yeah, that's sort of what I'm craving at the moment. So that would be my death row meal.
Stuff that makes you fart in the break room.
Yeah, oh, geez, a curry fart. No way. No way. Right. With that, I think that's a show. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you all again bright and early next Monday morning. That was good. Whew. That was good.
That was funny.
I hope my end
got a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Got a lot of stuff in there.
Lots of stuff.
No. You did it great. You did great. Now, what's going on with this thing? Mareko and I were reached out about judging an event. Do you know any more about this, Mareko?
Yeah, I got a message God, I could go find the message. I can't think of the guy's name off the top of my head. But yeah, there's a Facebook group of a bunch of kind of newbie makers, and Broken Tower Cutlery. Dorian, I believe.
That's it. Broken Tower Cutlery.
And so he manages this group, and they're doing a competition. And then I don't know all the rules, but you can go check it out on their Facebook page. But they're asking us if we want to judge. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, what do you think, Craig? I guess it's like a new knife thing.
Yeah, I got a bit of a problem with judging because I don't know who is anybody to tell anybody how good their work is. You know, unless you can physically, you know, see it and use it, it's always going to be difficult, isn't it? So you're going on aesthetics, I suppose, and I don't know. It could be really difficult. Really difficult.
Here's what's interesting. Dorian was very smart. He shot it to me, and I immediately said, well, you know, I don't really feel like I don't really want to be in a position of judgment because I would rather encourage people as opposed to, you know, saying this is better than that. I don't want to step on someone's joy. You know what I mean? I don't want to make someone feel bad. I don't want to do
it. Yeah.
And then he said, well, you know, Mareka said, he said, sounds like a good idea. And I didn't realize. And I started to think maybe it would be a good thing for us to do if there were like a very set guidelines in regards to if there was a set of guidelines that we were to do. Yeah, you got 31,000 Facebook people and all of a sudden we're going to be, you know, roasted on Facebook, which I mean, that doesn't sound so great to me. But at the same time, like if Mareka, you like the idea. Maybe it's something we should look into. Might be fun.
Yeah.
You know, I guess,
sorry, go ahead.
I was saying as long as we had very definitive guidelines and it wasn't like super duper speculative. Like we'd have to have some, I would want it to be fair and I'd want it to be encouraging and I would want it to be, you know, I'd be down for it because you're down for it, Mareka. And then we'll work on Craig.
I mean, we're judging people nonstop.
I do it, but I mean,
on the show, anyways, right?
No, we're not. Judging people nonstop.
This isn't like a visual medium, is it? You know, we're a podcast, and trying to explain what something is doesn't always come across the best on a podcast. But
well, I don't think it's judging. I don't think it's judging on the podcast. I think we would be judges off the podcast. I don't think isn't like a TV show, Craig. This would be like. You know, Dorian's got to send us a guideline of what he expects of us as judges. I think it would be fun for the show. I think it would be good for him. I think it would be, you know, it would be fun for us to kind of be in a position because we've never done that before.
Sure.
No.
You know.
Yeah, it could be fun. Could be fun. But yeah, I'd be all about encouragement as opposed to say, you know, picking holes in people's work.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's also subjective too, right? I mean, and that's why I think, Jeff, want guidelines, right? But I think ultimately, what appeals to me isn't necessarily going to be what appeals to either of you guys.
That's the thing. It's like if we get some ideas of what the expectations are, I think it might be, you know, we've never done this before. It might be fun. It might be fun for the show. It might be good, you know, be submitting ourselves to maybe new listeners. And I think we could, I think if we had guidelines, I think we could have it could be very positive.
Sure.
But, you know, if Mareka was into it, I'm all of a sudden I changed my tune. So I thought maybe, you know, might be good for the show. So,
okay.
So Dorian, if you're listening to this, Dorian, we're tentatively in, you got to give us a little more guidelines and, you know, I don't know, maybe we should announce the winner on Knife Talk because, you know, you got to get your listeners, you got to get your 30,000 followers to listen to this show.
You know? I do think,
in regards to us being judgmental, the only thing I'm judgmental about is other podcasts.
Right. That's fair. I was just going to say, I think there's a little bit of deliberation period too. It's not like all the submissions come in and then the next day we have to come up with, or later that day we have to come up with a select winner. I think there's a little bit of time to deliberate. And so I think that also might be good for us to kind of talk through possibly on the show, but in general, just like our thought process and how we're deliberating, maybe.
We could deliberate on the after show.
We could, yes.
We could have the after show deliberation. Dorian.
Yeah.
Dorian, I give Dorian a lot of credit. He fucking smart. He scattershot all of us. He didn't just send it to one. He sent it to all three of us. So he had me. He fucking turned me. So Dorian is, he's a fucking clever dude. I am with fucking Dorian. And he had me. He had me good. So
yeah, shoot your shot.
Let's. He did a good job. He's like, you know, I was like, oh, you already talked to, you talked to all three of us, you clever fuck. And I didn't think I said fuck, but I said, you clever bastard. And he's just,
well, you know what we could do? I mean, these are all going to be based on images of, obviously, of the knives. So what we could do, if we're going to be talking about them on the after show whilst we deliberate, we could all share them on the Knife Talk Instagram as well, and maybe get some comments from our followers.
We don't want to, you know, getting comments from our listeners sometimes is... You know, it might not be as encouraging as we will be. You know, some of you motherfuckers are a little bit like, you know, a little bit too much clam talk and not enough knife talk. You know what I'm saying?
Quite true. Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. It could be fun.
The ball's in your court.
Yeah. What else is going on? Are interested possibly in doing this thing, if you go to broken_tower_culinary on Instagram, he's got a link on his profile that goes to the competition.
Yeah. And what else are we going to say? And then the Facebook group is called, what is it? Beginner Knife Makers?
Yeah, it's Knife Making for Beginners on Instagram. On Facebook.
Right. Speaking of which, speaking of Facebook, there's a slight controversy that I'm going to keep perpetuating, which, dude. So Nick Rossi has a super secret society on Facebook, and some people aren't happy about it. And I'm a member of that secret society, and I'm fucking happy about it, you know. So you want to get involved with the Nick Rossi super secret, I don't know, what's it fucking called? It's a super secret society, and I got to figure it out. I don't find it. It's a fucking good one.
That's not literally what it's called?
That's it. Oh, it's like a secret school of bladesmithing or something like that. It's crazy. And he's just like, you know, you either have to take one of his classes or do one of his online classes.
I gotcha.
And you get like admission into this secret society. And he says people are mad about it. So keep making people mad about it. So here I am, Nick. I'll be your fucking Huckleberry. So it's the Illuminati of, you know, bladesmith classing. So.
There we go. Well, look, that's a show. We've given you over 90 minutes of quality entertainment once again. Please stick with us, and we shall speak to you again next week. Bye. Let me hit stop. That was good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.